You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.
Hello and welcome to the Knicks Fix Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Hahn, and after an energized weekend at the Garden that saw two wins in front of raucous crowds, the Knicks hold a commanding 3-1 lead over the Cavaliers in their first round series. It was a wild scene at the Garden and even more outside of the building. To see thousands of fans shut down 7th Avenue celebrating playoff wins, it was remarkable. And Tracy Morgan out in the streets leading chants, and our window at MSG Network Studios filled with fans that were pressed up against it, taking selfies with us during the postgame shows. Listen, you love to see the passion and the energy that these people have waited so long to enjoy.
No fighting! Don't you wish, you can't do it!
It's all like that. Look, I'm not the one that's going to say it's just the first round. All right. Let me tell you, after everything that all you Knicks fans have been through, that just New York City has been through, it's okay to enjoy every moment. I mean, it's the Garden. It's okay for you to celebrate, even if it's just, it's only a first round win. I understand. You go to the building, you experience something, that, especially you younger fans, that you don't really know. You only heard about stuff like this. You've only heard about the roar and what it feels like in a playoff game to have a player make clutch plays, to have your team be better than the opponent, to have the other team's star not make it his own personal stage. I completely understand why you would want a night like that to never end, which is why you're out on the streets celebrating with fellow Knicks fans, because you have something to feel really good about. You have every right to do that. And understand that you're doing it because you know now, finally, after being told for so many years, it's just different. It's different when the Knicks are good at the Garden. It's different. And now you got to experience it. It's something Tom Thibodeau experienced as an assistant coach back in the day when he was on Jeff Van Gundy's staff on that team that went to the finals, that went to the conference finals in '99, conference finals in 2000. And for Tom Thibodeau, yeah, it's all about the building.
There's nothing like the Garden. The energy that comes with the building, what it means, all that stuff. So I thought our fans brought great energy, and that's helpful. But we have the best fans, and it's the best arena to play in. So there's nothing like a big game in the Garden.
Nothing like it at all. But now the series moves back to Cleveland for Game 5. And while the Knicks are one more win away from winning their first playoff series in 10 years, you got to understand, like, this is the closest the Knicks have been to winning a playoff series since they took a 3-0 lead against the Celtics in the first round of the 2013 playoffs. Yeah, they were up 3-0 in the first round that year, 10 years ago. That series needed 6 games to win it. You understand? Like, so that's why, while there's enthusiasm, there's also the understanding that there's still some work to be done, that there's still a lot more to do.
It's not over. Not even close to being over. We got to continue to focus on one day at a time. There's nothing to celebrate. There's nothing to be truly happy about. So obviously, we'd be one tonight. We're one step closer, but we got to continue to have that same mindset mentality and that we have over the past couple games.
Jalen Brunson with a little bit of perspective there, and you need it, of course. But with perspective, let me also give you some history. Teams that have a 3-1 lead in a best-of-7 series in the NBA playoffs go on to win the series 95% of the time. So you can take that with you into Wednesday's game in Cleveland. Now, how do we get here? Simple. Depth, defense, rebounding. And as I've talked about a lot on my show, Bart and Hahn, before the series began, it was going to take the emergence of RJ Barrett. Brunson has been sensational, especially in the clutch situations, which is really what he's done all year. And we'll get to everything that he has done so far through this series later on. But let's give props to RJ Barrett out of the gate here. And his performance over the weekend that had the Garden crowd chanting his name. I mean, think about that for a moment. First two games of this series, you had a lot of narrative about whether or not he was the right guy. 6-25 from the field, averages 10 points a game. He turns that into being the catalyst for the Knicks' offense, especially bookended, basically, games 3 and 4. I mean, understand, the start of game 3 that he had was critical. The Knicks desperately needed somebody to do something. I talked to a former NBA coach who was watching, and he observed to me that Barrett scored when the Knicks couldn't score. Remember that ugly first quarter? Neither team really could get anything going offensively. So when the Knicks had to get something so that they could keep the crowd on their side, that they could have some type of advantage, it was Barrett who provided that. And then win in time game four, the other end of the spectrum. RJ again was the engine. He drove relentlessly into the Cavs defense. He was drawing fouls. He was making plays. He was making buckets. He had 7 points in a 15-6 run that pretty much opened the game up. The Knicks went up 9 in the fourth quarter. He actually had 10 points in that fourth quarter. He had a floater in the lane that made it 100-90. That was 48 seconds to go, and that was pretty much the knockout punch that the Knicks needed.
I think, you know, the fourth quarter was huge. I mean, they had a good run to start the third. They played a really good third quarter. You know, Jalen hit a huge shot at the end of the third to put us up, so that was big. And then just, you know, fourth quarter, just staying tough. You know, every time they threw a punch, kind of threw some back.
And that's been this series, at least from the start to finish, talking a lot about throwing punches and responding and everything else. And after RJ's struggles in the first two games of the series that, as I mentioned, led to a lot of criticism of his play and some second guessing from people about whether or not, you know, about trading him or not trading him for Donovan Mitchell, Barrett gives you 22 points per game on 57% shooting in these two playoff performances at home that were desperately needed, especially when you consider how much Julius Randle has underperformed so far in this series. Now, RJ's still having his issues from three-point range. So he was 3-for-6 in game three. That was good. But he went 0-for-6, in game four. But that's the part that, to me, it doesn't matter. He was effective where he was at his best, getting into the paint. He had 18 of his 26 points in the paint. All right, that's where he does his best work. Draws fouls. He got 13 free throw attempts. You know, those are the types of plays when you see RJ is on his game.
Super aggressive, you know, downhill, getting to the line. But those attacks, I thought, you know, attacking the double teams, getting to the backside, put them in some closeouts, long closeouts, and I thought he read the closeouts well. The game will tell you what to do. Defensively, I think we started the third quarter poorly, but we got better as it went along.
You know, and it is something that we talked about on the post-game show as well is, you know, Wally Szczerbiak and Monica McNutt both made the case that RJ Barrett, one thing we know about him, yes, he's young, he's 22 years old, but he is a pretty smart player. He's somebody that the more he watches something, he observes, he sees it, now he realizes what he can do. So we're in a playoff series, and in the first two games, he struggles, having a hard time in the paint, a lot of hesitation. Watch some film, start to see places you can go, things that you can do, what you can get away with. And the fact that he, instead of getting rattled and down on himself, just putting in the work and, okay, I know what I can get away with. I know what I can do. And he started to do it. Now, again, going on the road, game five, the Knicks are going to need certainly more of it. All right. Now, some other news and notes from the series so far as we are now four games in with the Knicks winning three of the first four. Here's a little did you know. Jalen Brunson and RJ Barrett are the first pair of Knicks teammates to score 25 points in a playoff game since Carmelo Anthony and Raymond Felton back in 2013. They both had big game fours, and it's been 10 years since we've seen two Knicks players get over 25 in the game. Brunson, by the way, has been magnificent, as we know, and he's done all kinds of different types of history with the Knicks so far in his first playoff series with the Knicks. He's the second player in Knicks history to score at least 20 points in each of his first four playoff games with the franchise. The second in Knicks history. Think about that for a minute. It's a long history. And to score 20 points in each of his first four playoff games? So you go all the way back to 1968 for the first to do it. And that, of course, fall back, baby, Dick Barnett. A little trivia for you. You can share with your friends. You know, you want to sound smart. Now, the Knicks have done a lot of damage in this series, forcing turnovers. I've talked a lot about the turnover aspect in this. They have not really been a team during the regular season that turns you over, but their defense has really had the Cavs on their heels. But not just forcing turnovers, turning those turnovers into points. That has been something that Josh Hart has brought to this team since they got him, is that he is quick in transition. Turnovers, off the rebound, whatever it is, they tend to do things quickly. The Cavs are averaging in this series 16.5 turnovers per game so far. The Knicks have scored 99 points off those turnovers. It's by far the most points off turnovers scored in the playoffs this year by any team. Like, it is, I believe the Warriors are second, and they have 71. The Knicks have 99 points off turnovers. So, and through the first three games, they were doing things you haven't seen in playoffs in a long time. Through the first three games, they had 83 points off turnovers, and ESPN stats and info tell us that's the most points off turnovers by any team in a playoff series in the last 25 years. So they're using that as a weapon. The main weapon, though, everybody, has been rebounding. As we know, it has been the strength of the team all year. It's going to be the strength for them throughout the playoffs. It's how they're going to win games. And it's not only just the rebounding, but it's then the second chance points off offensive rebounding. So they were one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the league throughout the regular season. And in the playoffs, it continues. Through the first four games, they're leading the league in rebounds, offensive rebounds, at 14.5 offensive boards per game. And that includes they had 17 in game four. They're also turning them into extra possessions, into extra points. They have 71 total second chance points in this series. It's the most through the first four games of a series of any team in the last 25 years of the playoffs. Again, ESPN stats and info providing that beautiful little nugget there as well. More stuff to watch for, of course, in game five. And this is all from the work of Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein, the two centers, who come into the series with a lot of talk and a lot of hype about Jared Allen and about Evan Mobley, the 2 7-footers that the Cavs have, and can Robinson and Hartenstein, you know, battle them? They have outplayed them. Robinson has been absolutely dominant over the weekend. You know, I didn't think he played that great in game two. In fact, I kind of felt he was a little soft in game two. But in games three and four, he's been a monster. And just as important as Barrett was at the start of game three, as I mentioned before, Mitchell Robinson's effort in game three at the beginning, getting rebounds, getting offensive rebounds, tips, just how active he was on the glass early in that game, that was so important for the Knicks to get through some of the early struggles that they had on the glass. It is not something to overlook, even though some things don't exactly jump up in the box score. Just seeing how he was affecting the game early on, he and, again, RJ Barrett, huge impact on the game. All right. A big story to come out of game four, and this is something, again, that always tends to happen in the playoffs. There's always drama. There's always you get one side doing well. Somebody is now not playing enough or not getting enough playing time as a result. And this now is the story of Julius Randle. He stayed on the bench for the entire fourth quarter of game four. He only had 7 points on 3 of 10 shooting. He really has been mostly ineffective in this series after, you remember game one, he had a great start. He had a really good first quarter. And then since then, he's kind of really struggled. And I feel like he was going to struggle in this series regardless because they have a lot of length in the paint. And he, when he goes into the paint, struggles against long-arm defenders. And he struggles even more if he's not knocking down his three-point shot, which that is a big issue with him so far right now. So Tom Thibodeau decided in game four, with the Knicks rolling, to stick with Obi Toppin instead of bringing Randle back into the game. Obi Toppin played all but 41 seconds of the 12-minute final quarter. And he had 5 rebounds. 5 of his season-high 8 rebounds in that quarter. He played really well, and Tom Thibodeau felt like that group was working, and so he was going to stick with it.
Yeah, you know, like we were searching, and we knew this game was going to be a challenge just because of the quick turnaround. You know, so the late game on Friday, turnaround, early start today, find a way to win, and then that group got going and so you, at some point, you're making your decision probably around the 5-minute mark, 6-minute mark, and we rode that out. And so those guys built the lead, and you know, and obviously, you know, you're gonna whatever you think gives yourself your team the best chance to win. That's what you're gonna do. And that being said, you know, like you got a number of guys that are sacrificing and putting the team first. So I think that's critical.
Look, it wasn't an easy decision. It's easy for us to say. It's easy for people to sit and watch and say, keep Randle on the bench. He's not effective. But when you're the coach of a team, especially when you have a guy like Randle who all season long has been your, I mean, 25, 10, and 4. I've mentioned this many times before. There's only three other players in the league averaging that. So he's been their productive player. He's been important. He was their all-star. You know how this stuff works. It's not easy to look down the bench and you see an all-star and you're like, I'm not going to you. We're going to leave you there. That's a tough decision because if it blows up, well, you're going to take all the criticism. How are you leaving your all-star on the bench? But it worked. And so Tom Thibodeau now understands that it's a delicate situation with a guy like Julius Randle, who you know wants to be out there. But we also know has been struggling. And Tibbs made sure to point out that we all know going into the playoffs that Randle wasn't quite 100%.
Look, Julius is our horse. He's given us everything that he has. A lot of guys probably wouldn't even be playing. So I knew that with the quick turnaround, probably impact him more than most players. He was out an extended amount of time. We got multiple days here before the next game. He'll get a chance to get some recovery time, but I think that's a big part of it. So, but the thing I love about him is he gives you everything he has.
Now, there was some talk about Randle didn't talk to the media after the game, that he blew off the media. And I can tell you that's not exactly how it went down. The Knicks didn't make him available. And why? As you could tell, I mean, this is what Tibbs is all about. There's no reason for attention towards why didn't you play and all that stuff. He'll talk. I'm sure he'll talk at some point between games 4 and 5. But was he mad? Was he upset? I can tell you no. Everything I know and people I've talked to have told me that he was fine, that he understood it, and he was supportive of his teammates. And the ABC cameras in the game on Sunday caught him having conversation with players and cheering and all those things that you would expect a leader to do. Tibbs doesn't have to really explain too much, but he did. He doesn't have to even apologize for any of this either. This ain't the time for personal feelings. It's a time for everybody to recognize what's working. Again, Randle has had the ankle sprain at the end of the season. He missed the last 2 weeks of the regular season. He worked his way back to be ready for the playoffs. He has said the ankle's fine, but he talked about his game conditioning being a bit of an issue. I still believe playoff series are about matchups, and as I said before, I just don't think the Cavs are a good matchup for him because of his struggle against length defenders, and they throw a lot of that at him. Cavs have Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, 2 7-footers I mentioned before. One or two are always shadowing him some way or another whenever he's trying to make a move. And if he's not making his shots from three, he's 8 for 31, by the way, in this series, he's just going to struggle. He doesn't unlock his offense. Keep in mind his best game against the Cavs this season, he hit 8 of 12 from three-point range. That's why he had a big game. He had it going from downtown. We'll see what happens in game 5, but don't be surprised if it's another quiet game for Randle, for several reasons. But he might be a little more determined when you consider he did not play in the fourth quarter. He's a proud guy. Now, again, just to point out some stuff, think about this. A lack of production out of the Knicks' only all-star does speak to the depth of this team. It is a strength that I've talked about many times. The fact that they can withstand and still lead a series 3-1 despite Randle not producing. Think about 2 years ago in the playoffs against the Hawks. They took him out of the series. They shut him down. Knicks had nobody else to do anything. That's how they lost that series. They just had no other player who could pick up the slack. Their depth this year is so much better than 2 years ago. And just historically, because ESPN Stats and Information Group, they do an amazing job, and I love sharing all these little nuggets with you. So Randle's production drop-off in the regular season, he averaged 25 a game, remember. Compared to the playoffs, where he's at 14.8 points per game, has some history to it. So he's down. It's a 10.3 point per game decline, which is fourth among players who average 25 points a game or more during the regular season. So if you think about it from Nick's perspective, he's only slightly behind Amari Stoudemire. Amari had a 10.8 point per game drop from his season average to his playoff average in that 2010-11 postseason. Remember, Amari suffered that back injury in the Duncan pregame warmups before game 2 of that first round series against the Celtics, which was a really good battle in game 1. Felt like that was going to be a good series. Chauncey Billups gets hurt in game 1. He don't see him the rest of the series. And then Amari hurts himself before that game, and he's all jacked up. And Carmelo suddenly was left to have to do things by himself, and that series ended pretty quickly. But Amari had a big scoring season that year. Melo came in late in the year, and then Amari, really, his average went down. It wasn't just due to Melo's presence. It was due to the back injury that really hindered his ability to be at top level. Just for anybody wondering, the biggest drop-off of all time from regular season to playoffs was Wilt Chamberlain. His scoring average in 1962 dropped 15 points per game in the playoffs. But I do want to point out that that season Wilt averaged 50 points a game. So the drop-off still led to like 35 a game in the postseason, which is pretty good. While we're talking about Randall's struggles, we got to also point out that Cleveland's all-star Donovan Mitchell, he's also kind of been a passenger on the struggle bus too. He had just 11 points in 42 minutes in game four. He was 5 for 18 and 0 for 4 from 3 in game four. In the second half, he just had 2 points. He made 1 of 9 shots. It's the fewest second half points he scored in the playoffs in his entire career. He had more turnovers than made field goals. He had 6 turnovers and 5 made field goals. You got to credit the Knicks' defense. Even without Quentin Grimes, by the way, he was out with a shoulder contusion. He didn't play in game four. He suffered that contusion in the first half of game three, and the Knicks do miss him in his defense. But, again, back on the theme of depth for this team, Josh Hart steps into the starting lineup, and he takes on the job of stopping Donovan Mitchell on his own. And think about this. Game one, Donovan Mitchell was 6 for 11 when Josh Hart was his primary defender, and Donovan Mitchell had a big game one, 38 points. Since then, when Josh Hart was the primary defender on Mitchell, Donovan Mitchell shot 6 for 22. He was 4 for 13 when Hart guarded him in game four. Like I said going into the series, it continues to hold true. The Knicks' depth is one of their greatest strengths. They can throw waves of players at you. And even when you lose someone, Randall doesn't have a good series. He can't score. Someone else slides in. RJ Barrett steps up and gets the scoring done. When Quentin Grimes, a starter, your 3-and-D guy who's supposed to guard the other team's best player, he gets hurt. He's out of the lineup. Josh Hart emerges, steps in, and gets the job done. Where now off the bench, you have Emmanuel Quickley still getting it done. Deuce McBride steps in, plays 5 minutes, places chant in his name. 5 minutes, but it's all you needed. Comes in, locks him up a little bit. The depth just continues to be a strength for this team. It is something that we know will always be their strength because it is the most important thing that they have when you don't have a superstar player. You need to have a lot of players that can go. And Josh Hart told us on the MSG Network in the postgame when we talked to him that he feels like their depth goes beyond 5 starters.
It's huge. Like I said, I think we got guys, you know, possibly 8 starters on this team. Obviously, the 5 that we have. I started for the last, you know, year and a half. You know, Zay, I think, can start quick. Someone who can start on a lot of teams. So we did that. And then Deuce came in and gave great energy, great minutes, tough on the defensive end, knocked down a big 3 for us. You know, so when you have that depth, it showed, especially in that third quarter when the starters didn't do their job and we lacked energy, lacked physicality, lacked toughness. They came in and they brought that and they really changed the game. So we got to give them, you know, a huge credit for this win.
I mean, it's going to be a strength for this team as long as they go in the postseason. By the way, 8? He mentioned 8. I could probably count 9 that could start. But still, 8's a lot. One last thing. We've been watching this for most of the second half of the season, and I really haven't thought a lot about it. Jalen Brunson, when he makes his threes. Now, he had 5 threes. The Knicks had 8. He had 5. Like, no one's hitting threes in this series, but he got hot from downtown. He made a big one in the fourth quarter. He celebrates by putting his 2 fingers and thumb and his nose, like, he puts it against his face and his nose, like, in between the thumb and the finger. And it's like a little celebration thing. I don't know if it's I don't know what it is. It looks like he's sniffing his I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm looking at it now more than ever before because while at first, I would just see it and think, all right, it's some kind of a 3 thing. Like, remember Melo did the 3 to the dome? You know, everybody has a little celebration. That's great. But because he is now making it a secret, I feel like I need to know more. So Jeff Van Gundy on the ABC broadcast on Sunday just asked himself, like, what is he doing? What does that mean? So, of course, Lisa Salters, after the game, asked him, and Brunson was not offering up anything.
The guys want to know your three-point celebration. Where'd it come from?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, wow. Okay. You don't need to know, guys. You don't need to know.
Oh, no. I need to know. Don't you? We can all have our guesses, but we kind of need to know. Maybe by the next episode, I'll have your answer. That's why you listen. But that'll do it for this episode of the Knicks Pick Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll do this again after Game 5. And like I said, maybe I'll have an answer. I'll have to talk to Jalen and see if he'll at least tell me. We'll be talking about a lot at that point. Could we be talking about a series win and going into the second round? Or are we talking about a Game 6, another game at the Garden on Friday? As always, for more Knicks coverage, be sure to tune in to Bart and Hans Show weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.